This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, October 19th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 352. I am your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Gita Jackson.
Hello, I'm Gita.
And Ricardo Contreras. How are you doing, Cotto?
I'm doing great, because this Happy weekend, yeah. I earned my Destiny shirt.
You did
I did it.
Oh, well, you have to show us the finished. Shirt.
Yeah, it's
last year, you did not earn that shirt. I got a shirt.
I got a shirt.
You did not earn the shirt.
Shout out to the person who wished to remain anonymous for giving me the shirt code. But this year, I finally did it. I did it. It was a little easier this year, to be fair.
Wait, was it? What made it easier? Is it the similar thing of like having a bunch of challenges and stuff?
Yeah. The one thing is that because it's the end of, a large, like, kind of era of Destiny, and they're gonna take away a bunch of stuff. They included all the raids that they're taking away as things that you can, like, getting points to get the shirt. So it was like, oh, I've already done all these. It was really easy to, like, blow through them all, like, a fourth, a fifth time. Like, so it was like, that normally wouldn't have counted. Like, it's usually much more specific to whatever the current season is. But so this year is kind of like a look back over the last couple of years. So there was a lot of stuff that I've already done. So it wasn't too bad. It's still under the wire because it's still only 2 weeks out. And if I didn't have those raids in there that counted towards the completion, I would have probably had to do a little bit more grinding as we got towards the deadline. But
What's the shirt's vibe?
It's, you know, it's got an emblem on it. It's got I can put my gamer tag on it. It's all right. Let me see. Budgeting it. Shirt. Triumph shirt.
Bungie Rewards Moments of Triumph shirt. What this says, what's that say? What's Atis try? Is it just, sorry, I'm doing quick.
Yeah.
Quick Latin translation here. It's been a minute.
Atis.
Is that like the Age of Triumph? Yes, it's the Age of Triumph.
Right, that makes sense.
Is that what this is? Are you in the Age of Triumph now? Because I felt like darkness was about to come down on the world.
It
of Destiny.
Is. It I
feel
mean,
very triumphant.
Almost
me,
like the opposite
personally.
Of it's always. Well, I mean, it's the opposite of always darkest before the dawn. It's also always brightest before
the dark.
The dark, I guess.
Happy election season, everybody. Exactly. Totally. God. Yeah. How was everyone else's week? Everyone else, Gita, how was your weekend?
Oh man,
small pod today.
My weekend, I didn't do shit, and it felt amazing. I mean, we had a really good Shabbos. This was every Friday for a Shabbat. David makes me chili, and I literally wake up on Friday morning just thinking like he's gonna go get some beans. He's gonna be making me chili tonight. He started making it with like kidney beans and black eyed peas, which has been an incredibly, the black eyed peas are very good in the chili, I have to say. I just don't know. I feel like since we ate that chili, I just feel like that is my signal to be like brain and complete clock out mode. And it's just like a sense memory. I feel like I'm eating this chili. I'm not going to be looking at my phone. I'm going to be enjoying this chili. And then I got really into the Dodgers this weekend. I watched an entire Dodgers game. Yeah. Well, okay, so here's the thing. David has been making some intense noises from the other room when I'm, like, gaming. So he'll be like, it's Dodger tonight. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go play some Destiny or whatever.
Yeah.
He'll just be like, ugh, from the other room as they get clobbered. Except the other day when they got, you know, they were down two, and then it's insane, like, totally bonkers game where they scored 15 runs in, like, the first two innings.
Jesus.
Yeah, he, like, called his dad and was like, hey, Dad, you see, this is nuts. And then the next game, they lost, but they came from behind. They were down 8-7. It's like they came from back, like, the last couple innings and scored all seven of those runs. And then the next couple of games, it's just been these real nail biters, right, against the Braves, who are from a really, really good team. But yesterday, they were managed to pull it out, like, twice. Twice the Braves scored on them, and they came back. And, like, just the one run that was amazing was Cody Bellinger. Like, it's two outs. There's nobody on the bases. They've struck out the first two people to go up. Two balls, two strikes. He hits a home run.
That's baseball to me.
Yeah. And he, like, sees it and just stands there watching it and then starts walking. Like, just walking, casually strolling. But then he sees his guys, and he's, like, so psyched that his guys are happy for him. He just starts screaming and yelling. It's really great. Yeah, and that was it. Beautiful. Mookie Betts with a beautiful home run. We love my beautiful son, my beautiful baby boy. Yeah.
While we're in the world of sports, something adjacent happened this weekend, which is, I think God got killed in Blazeball.
Seems like what happened in Blazeball, yeah.
Well, listen, my understanding is Dominic Marijuana, former player of the New York Millennials, was there to hit the winning home run, the home run that destroyed the shelled one.
Is my
understanding. So shout out to Dom, rest in violence. Shout outs to everyone who has made Blazeball so very cool over the last couple of weeks, especially.
Who was it that was flickering back and forth? I just missed. That was pitching.
I don't know.
I think it was either Hot Dog Fingers or Trollolo. Either one of them. One of them had this. It was a very funny thing where they had the loyalty. Stat.
Oh, right.
And so whenever they would flip to the, they were, I think it was Hot Dog Fingers was on the side of, was on the side of the squids against, fighting against the peanut. And then whenever she would switch to the other team, the loyalty thing kicked in and her stats dropped while she was on the other team, and then she would flicker back. It was amazing.
That's very good. The game band really built a game with a lot of interesting mechanics. Yeah. When we got to this fight last week, for people who don't know, God. How do you, there are so good videos Blazeball. On the internet of people explaining this. You could just look them up. But, like, the long and short is this game that has been about fantasy Blazeball teams fighting each other, I guess real Blazeball teams playing the splort of Blazeball against each other, kind of came to a head last week, which, again, really quick disclosure, Friends of the Table did sponsor a season, but I always feel like disclosures like that go backwards, because that disclosure is I gave them money. So it's like, yeah, no shit, I think they're good. I gave them money so that we could, because I wanted to support it and use them as advertising. Like, yes, they did not pay for this. Anyway, there had been, like, a slow, horrific build where, like, players were being incinerated and also seemingly turned into peanut shells, or, like, put inside of peanut shells.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the last, like, championship, it turned into a big JRPG boss fight between the champion and the shelled one, a giant peanut god. And that came out of nowhere and was extremely good if you put on the Undertale boss themes in the background while watching it, IMO. And that repeated this past week, except it went much better than last time. So, fun. Shout outs to the game band.
It's good stuff.
Has anyone been playing anything other than watching Blazeball?
I played randomly like a ton of games.
Yeah, your list of stuff today was like, damn, Gita went in.
Yeah, I just like finally had a second. It was like, it was during the time that David was making me chili that I was like, I need to just, I bought a bunch of games and I was like, I need to play just a bunch of stuff that I wanted to play for a long time. So first I started playing the new game from Kitbox, or that's being published by Kitbox, which is Lucifer Within Us,
right,
which really did seem like it's completely up my alley. So I really am vibing with the music, the voice acting, the art in this game. It is a really, really, like, very much my brand of, like, a dark goth shit, where there's, like, a, you know, like, there's a bunch of demons and, like, religiosity. It's not Christianity, but it's a very pageant, like, there's a lot of pageantry involved, which I love. And so you play in this game the role of an exorcist. But in this world, exorcists and detectives are kind of like the same thing.
Yeah.
So
this
all
is,
yeah.
The aesthetic to this is like high faith Deus Ex or something. Like there's like a great, there's like lots of angles. It's not like all hexagons or whatever, but it has, I advanced a little bit more in a polygonal form, just showed up. But yes, like it's like cyber Catholicism.
Yeah. It's a Ayin Soph is the god that they worship, and I didn't do the research on what pantheon that god is from. I think it's real. But there are the demons are Christian demons, like it's Beelzebub and Lucifer, etc. But the god is not the Christian god. But there is like the level of pageantry that Catholicism has it in sort of how this religion is presented. The first murder you solve is a new bishop or like equivalent level is having a crown affixed to their head or calibrated to their voice that allows them to like be extra effective when preaching, essentially. So it's like a technological augment to their natural charismatic abilities. Like, yeah, so that's where we're ending up, like what kind of society we live in.
Apparently, I see now.
Yeah, you know, just normal shit, like regular stuff. Yeah, according to the prologue, there hasn't been a murder for like decades upon decades. And that's because crimes within this universe are caused by demons inside you. That's what tells you to commit a crime. When you're possessed or coerced by a demon that has been, that nudges you and causes you to act on your like negative desires. So the one murder I'm in the middle of, I saw the first murder and then got a little bit tricked on this, like a little bit stumped on the second one. But the format of how you solve these murders, it's like it's Phoenix Wright-esque, I would say. There's no, like, you're not going to court, you know, or anything like that. But you're walking around these court, these crime scenes, collecting evidence and interviewing suspects. And when you have a suspect's interview, it shows up on a timeline that's at the bottom of the screen. And you know, once you have all of the available suspects' interviews, up to three, I think, you can match them up against each other and check them for inconsistencies. So you are getting to shout objection in a way.
If you
find evidence that's contradictory, and that includes like physical evidence that you can pick up across the map that's contradictory to their testimony, you can force the suspect to recant or change what they're, or be more specific in the testimony. What also happens there is when you catch someone in a lie, you can open up their inner sanctum and reveal the insecurities within them, allowing you to back up your testimonies with their psychology.
So just like me.
It's really interesting. So you learn, sometimes it's pretty obvious who like the what the solution is. But it's like finding out why they did it is like is very important to this game.
Yeah. That's like one way you can do the mystery, right? Like you can do it as a genre. Like you can do the mystery that is like a whodunit where there's like a lot of red herrings to follow, and you have to be really clever about piecing things together. And you can do the mystery where it's like the mystery is more about motive and about how we got here than it is about the details in front of us. You know?
Yeah.
Which is a fun, that's a fun way of doing it.
And you learn a lot about the world that you're in via why people feel the things that they feel. I learned through interviewing one of the characters that they survived a famine. And I was like, okay, that's another wrinkle on this, like, this apparent utopia with no murder, is that there's no murder, but there was a famine. And then, right. You know, there's desperate, there's poor people exist, you know.
But no murder, which means that everything is chill.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. So, you know, something rotten here in the state of Denmark, for sure. The second murder is, like, all about class politics, which I found very interesting. Your three suspects are an academic, a wealthy and devout, like, not wealthy, but a devout and sort of haughty coroner that's at a funeral, and the groundskeeper. And the groundskeeper is the one that comes off as immediately most suspicious, and immediately you figure out has lied the most, but only because they're afraid of being caught. And I really thought that the way that they handled that particular aspect was, like, very interesting, because that's very true in our world, where, you know, you find people that lie to the police, not because they have anything to hide or have done anything wrong, because they know that they will be treated differently.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
And because they're just shook, and it's, like, easy to talk yourself into lies when you are fucking scared out of your mind.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have this background awareness of the fact that, like, people like you, you know, that look like you are in your situation, are treated differently by the cops, added to being just fucking scared. I never want to talk to a cop in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, like, pretty much fine. Like, I don't have any reason to be terrified, but whenever I see a cop, I'm like, hello, sir. I've never done anything wrong in my life. There's no weed in my home. Like, you know, right. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So you got through that first mystery or the first case, and then you started the second one?
Yeah, started the second one. I'm almost done. But, okay. I mean, it's very promising. I really, really like it, and I wanted time to sink my teeth into it. But I also just was like, I've been playing, like, Destiny.
Listen,
just Destiny for, like, a while.
The reason I am not being like, I have all these new games to talk about today is because I've been playing the same old shit. And y'all don't need me to talk about Genshin Impact or Squadrons again, you know?
Actually, I wanted to quickly about Genshin Impact. Okay, I reached a place where I had to do a stealth aspect, and I, like, quit immediately and decided to restart Breath of the Wild. That's what happened
good for
to me.
It's
just like, listen,
out.
I'm not... this game is not built for stealth, and it is very hard for me to get from point A to point B in this room, and I don't want to do it. I didn't pay for this game, and I have Breath of the Wild.
You have Breath of the Wild already. You didn't put any money in this thing. You don't lose shit by not continuing to play. There we go.
Yep, exactly.
There's, like, two stealth missions in Genshin Impact that are, like, ugh. There's, like, no cost to failing them, at least. In fact, there's, like, that one really bad stealth mission in Breath of the Wild in the, like,
in the ninja
Gerudo,
place.
The ninja place. Yeah. What are the names of the ninjas? Not remember?
I opened up Breath of the Wild, my 2-year-old save file, and did not even remember how to play the game, because, like, all the buttons are weird, right? Attack is Y.
Yiga.
I was just sitting there pressing Yiga. A Yiga. Over and over again, like, nothing, like,
that's not going to do it.
It's not going to do it at all. It's going to do jack shit. That's a great way to fall off a tower 3 times in a row.
It sure is. those two stealth missions fucking suck in Genshin, but, like, I feel like the thankfully, there are two of them, and I don't have to fucking deal with them beyond that, and I've gotten probably, like, high double digits.
Wait, only two?
So Heather has Venti. I want
Venti's
great. So bad.
Yeah, I have Venti. I have, like, I've pulled a couple Ventis, and it's like, Jesus, everyone should get a Venti. Christ. Everyone.
Well, it's too fucking late.
Everyone, I know, he's pulled. Well, he's still on the regular band. Theoretically get a Venti. You can still theoretically get a Venti. He's just
I thought event characters.
Is he not on the other banner at all?
No, that's what this is what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure event characters are only in their events, and events are limited time. Like the exact worst gotcha thing, you know?
Gotcha games. God damn it.
That's not good. That's not good. Venti, I'm, like, strongly of the feeling that, for people who don't know, Venti is a character in Genshin Impact who I think I've said before, he's, like, an incredible facilitator in combat situations. He's very good at, like, passing around elemental statuses and also doing crowd control. His ult, like, is, like, a big cyclone whirlwind thing that pulls every, like, small enemy together into one place.
He's very useful.
And then if you upgrade one of his certain things, he can like produce an updraft so that you can boost yourself up with your hang glider wherever you are, which is just so it's like Revali's grace in Breath of the Wild. And like, I truly believe that beating the first area of the game narratively and emotionally and gameplay balance wise should just give you a venti,
right?
Because he is that, I think he is that key to getting a lot of joy out of the next area of the game, which I think is a fantastic area kind of regardless, but having a venti with you is just very, 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 very useful. I'm checking.
Also, high key the best character. Like,
it's shocking how cool he is. Yeah, he's he's a good boy. And also,
he's our
maybe
non-binary king.
he is also maybe a god. Who could say?
Damn. He's just a regular bard. How dare you?
He's not in that other banner.
He's not in that other banner. Maybe he'll get shuffled into a third banner once the Klee banner shows up. You know,
I need the boy.
Have either of you gotten to see Klee, the new event banner person, who's like a little girl who throws bombs? She has like at a certain point. You unlock missions for characters to where you like get to like do their mission even if you haven't unlocked them and play as them for a little bit. Not just like the tryout thing, but like literally a story mission. And hers includes the fact that someone steals her treasure, and she's trying to get her treasure back, and you're like trying to help her, but also it's clear that she's like someone who kind of Mr. Magoo's her way through the world, and also does that as a mage who can create bombs out of nothing. And
this
is a
feels
child.
Very relatable to me.
She seems nice. I definitely cringe a little bit at some of the like childlike characters in this game, but this game does not do any of like the leering, gross sexuality stuff that a lot of similarly aesthetic, you know, similar anime aesthetic games do. And so you kind of just like, this is a cute character. This game is not sexualizing her. It's okay for this game to have a cute character in it. You know?
Yeah, it's she's not like also 9,000 years old, so the camera just like can go straight up your crotch.
Right, exactly, exactly. Venti is, of course, that exact thing, but the game just still doesn't do that. But, you know, what?
It's just a delight. He's just great to have around. Venti's life of the party.
Fantastic. I love him.
The second he showed up, I was like, I love him.
He's really
I love
good.
This sarcastic child.
He's so, well, that, I think there is so much to be said about Genshin's localization, redeeming a lot of character, like stock characters and kind of tropes from adventure anime stories that have worn out their welcome in other entries of like, you know, shonen anime or whatever, because of the degree of like sarcasm and humor that a lot of them bring to the table. A lot
that
of characters
line.
Dunking on each other a lot, and it's great.
That line Kaya has about, it's the same thing as children inheriting the hairstyles of their parents.
Oh my God,
like,
it's so
there's
funny.
Some self-awareness of the genre conventions here. So I'm going to be a little bit less bothered when this weird guy with an eye patch keeps inviting me to the bar, even though I'm clearly and obviously a 16-year-old.
Yeah, listen, Kaya is clearly the like sarcastic upfront, but secretly very serious, knows like all the secrets of the world, is trying to like do good things from the shadows, which is why he and Diluc should be boyfriends, because both of them want the best for the world.
Shipping possibilities
game are very strong. They're very strong.
It's because they like play with the archetypes, but and it's like self-aware of those archetypes, so when the romantic tension obviously and clearly like explodes between two archetypes that have obvious romantic tension, they're just like, yeah, sure, whatever, we lean into this, we lean into this.
Yeah, also I like Diluc is a rich pretty boy with red hair and pale skin, and Kaya is a brown pretty boy who seems broke as shit and has an eye patch with dark skin, and one of them's a fire boy and one of them is an ice boy. What are you gonna do? Come on. It is what it is.
What does that tag look like in AO3? Hang on.
Do some research. Some live research.
Genshin?
Here's an entirely wholesome image of the two of them. This is wholesome. They're both drinking. They're both hanging out and drinking.
Oh, wow.
Sure, this image does say R18, so I shouldn't click further in because
that is the cover to a dungeon. That is
100% a cover to a dungeon.
Maybe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But let's see. Good to know it's all out there. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the Genshin Impact tag in general on AO3 is not robust yet, only 163. So listen, I just feel like, oh my God, Diluc, 31 of those 163 entries are Diluc Kaya.
There you go. So, God bless.
God bless.
Beautiful.
Anyway, also the second area in Genshin Impact, I've seen some people start getting there.
Yeah, like
some people in the extended waypoint family. It's so good. It's so good. Are you there now, Kato?
Yeah, I'm just peeking in for the first time. I did the quest where you go talk to the other adventure guild person once the map opens up, and yeah. It's wild how much bigger the map is than you think originally. I didn't expect it to get that large, and like it's mm-hmm. literally like one of those, like, I thought when looking around it's like, oh, that mountain looks like Skybox. Nope. No, it fucking isn't. Nope. The and world is fucking huge. It's wild how
huge.
And also, like, it's not just like that's cool, it's big and it runs on a PC. Like, I'm playing this shit on my phone, like, before I go to bed every night. I'm just like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. How is this game this big? Yeah. It's kind of amazing.
Gita, if you can push past that one bad section, I really do think just getting to that second zone is also to see the end of the Venti stuff. It's so good. The end of, like, that Venti
listening
arc.
Listening to you guys talk about it has made me want to jump back in. You really are selling me. You convince me to buy a game every time you podcast.
I know. Well, this is the only one, and this one you don't have to buy.
You don't have to put money in it.
Yeah. Just go play it. The second area is so good, and I think I may have said this on here before, but maybe I just said it on Twitter, because of the way it, like, layers puzzles. It does a thing that I honestly, Breath of the Wild doesn't do this enough. It does it a little bit, but because there aren't the Breath of the Wild, like, shrine equivalents, it's externalizing a lot of that style, right? A physics puzzle, or, you know, lever puzzle, or whatever, switch based stuff, or thinking about exploration and solving multiple puzzles in a link to create something, or to, like, kind of do a to finish, like, the area. And so, like, in Liyue, which is the second area, you end up with all of these kind of ancient ruins, and I definitely have said this on this podcasting because I'm getting a flashback, but you end up with this situation of, like, okay, once I solve this puzzle, then the second thing happens, and the third thing happens, and then next thing you know, like, I'm in a cave with a giant, weird, ancient, like, you know, magical engine that's being guarded by these giant, ancient robots, and, you know, like, then you get to fight in that game, and you're doing the fight in that game, but the process of solving the puzzles that lead you to the kind of final confrontation, the way that those things are, like, Matryoshka dolled one on top of another until you get to, like, the final big thing. It's, like, a really cool way of communicating the interlocking mechanisms of this ancient, you know, culture that has kind of fallen into disrepair in certain places. Also, the stories and stuff is just good. There's a story beat that happens when you first get to that town, to, like, the big city, that is just, like, all-star good, beginning of an anime arc, or really any sort of fantasy arc, where it's just, like, there's, like, a cool, like, oh, this is, I'm meeting the characters in the world. There's a little bit of a build. And then, like, boom, like, the hammer fucking drops. And you're like, oh, shit, what's going on? So It's good.
I kind of wish it did more of those, that interlocking in the first.
Me too.
Area, right? Mondstadt is still, like, a little too flat, I feel like, for what the game actually can 100%. Do, it feels like. And it's just, like, there's hints of it. Like, right near the end, right up to the edge of Liyue, there are actually a couple of puzzles like that where you unlock, like, a certain, there's, like, one of the like, domains that you unlock has, like, this multi-part puzzle in order to get the door to appear. But, like, that, I feel like that's the only place in Mondstadt that really does that before you start to get into Liyue, and it starts doing it, like, over and over and all over the place.
Yeah, well, there's something else that's interesting about, like, getting treasure in that game, where, like, you do all that stuff, and then I'm, like, trying to understand my own response to this versus my response to something like a Diablo, which I'm not, like, historically a big Diablo person. I've, like, mm-hmm. played hack and slash style, like, RPGs and loot, you know, kind of, like, loot games like that, or Borderlands for that matter. And it I there is something about getting a crate full of shit that I know I'm going to be able to put into the items I like that,
right,
that makes them feel more valuable than even something like Borderlands where like, no, this is a gun. There's like, this is a unique item in the world that I could choose to use, but I'm not gonna, I'm going to sell it because it's, I don't like it. For right. whatever reason, coming into a room in Genshin after you've solved like a 3-step interlocking puzzle and seeing 4 giant chests filled with, you know, low tier items that I'm just going to break down and feed into my higher tier items does feel like walking into a room filled with treasure chests filled with money in a way right. that like sparks that sort of adventure-y joy that does not get sparked by here is another claymore with plus 7 on it from playing Diablo or something like right. that. You know,
well, it's because
claymores in Diablo, but you know what I mean.
Well, and like it's so much in that game, it's about the like different. It's like the randomization of the perks on each weapon that makes it yes. interesting to get new stuff. Where this, mm-hmm. like, everything is very kind of locked in. So yep. they did a smart thing by allowing lower tier stuff to be fed into higher tier stuff to kind of push it up slowly.
Yep.
Because then all of that still is, like, worthwhile investment of time, even though it's like, oh, this is a trash yeah. sword. But the trash sword can still be eaten up by my big sword.
And if you've upgraded the trash sword, most of what you put into the trash sword will go into your bigger, better sword.
Yeah.
Which is a great feeling, because it feels like you didn't fucking waste shit. Like, you know, right. it's like 10% or 20% less or something like that, but it's not that big of a deal. So, I don't know. Anyway, people should play through that second area because it's really masterful. And yeah, I definitely wish that they could put it. I wish Mondstadt had some of that stuff in it too.
Yeah.
But I very much feel like they were like, listen, we just made this whole second area. We're just going to make a third area. Do we want to go back to Mondstadt and make that better? Or do we want to make a third area afterwards that's as good as Leeway, but maybe a little bit better, you know? So, right. so we'll right. see.
Like, at this point, it's wild to me. Like, a Leeway is not even close the to end the end. The like, you no. fucking keep zooming out. I'm like, holy shit, this map is wild how big it is.
Yeah, they have said that December 23rd is when version 1.2 comes out, which is where there will be a new area called Dragon Spine, which I want to say is a third full area that might be the area that has like their fantasy Japan equivalent. Mm. I guess I'm not 100% sure, but you know, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I did not mean to have a whole Genshin Impact conversation, Gita. I know you were going to talk about.
I said briefly, let me just say one thing about Genshin Impact and listen, you convince me to play the game again.
Like, yeah. Yo, what are you running? What's your team?
Damn, we're really doing this?
Look, yeah, this is happening.
This is happening.
Don't fight right. fate.
Did you not see this post of mine?
Maybe
so I my saw. Main my thank you, Gita.
I respect you.
On Twitter. My main crew, I have a 4-step main crew, which is Beidou, who is like a claymore wielding electricity person who has like a really cool counter. If you've pulled her and have not tried her or used her stuff, I really advise it, because I think that she I'm really happy I had her early on, because she added depth to the combat that I did not have out the gate, because she like is the only character who can block. And having a character right. who can block and then charge up a counterattack or like perfectly time the parry really adds a layer to some of the encounters. It's fun. So she's like my main, even though she's definitely not my best character. So it's her, it's Venti, it's Shengling, who I think everyone is running because she's technically the strongest fire person right now. Sorry to Amber. I like Amber. Amber seems very nice, but I'm no one runs Amber.
yeah. Amber's just not the meta, unfortunately.
She's not the meta, but she's like she's really useful for exploring, because she gives yes. you a character who can set fire via bows very quickly for puzzles.
Right.
And yeah. then also she gives you a 20% stamina thing bonus
yeah.
while gliding, which is useful. And then Barbara, who is just like a great healer, basically.
Yeah.
Also, this game just has all these little details. So Barbara's whole thing is that she is like a nun, but also a pop idol, which seems to be a crossover thing with another, one of their other games. I unlocked a thing in her story, like her text story thing about how she became an idol. And it's that someone gave her a magazine and was like a magazine, like a human magazine from another world, in which she read about pop idols. And her friend was like, I'm going to create pop idols here in the world of Teyvat, which is the name of the Genshin Impact world. And she tried to, but the only person who stuck with it was Barbara, this cute nun, who now, like, all of her attacks are like idol poses. And it's have you not, Gita hasn't seen, I have to link you to Barbara.
Barbara's great.
Barbara's what? So good.
Someone gave this bitch a 17 magazine. And she was like, I'm doing this. This is me now.
This is me. And so I'm going to link you just so you can see some Barbara animations. Oh, the thing that I realized last week that's incredibly cute with Barbara is everyone in the game, if you attack, like, and while you're in town and almost hit an NPC, they like oh no, like they like kind of back away from you, they kind of like try to dodge you. But if Barbara does her attacks in front of anyone in town, they clap for her because she's like doing a performance. It's that's incredible.
That is Gita Jackson energy. That is what I need to project into the world.
It's so like good.
Hello, I've almost knocked you over, congratulations.
It's so fucking good. So she's good. She's like my main healer who like I don't extremely need. I could tag her out pretty regularly. And I have a couple of other healers who I think are like probably better suited for my main four, but I like having someone who's like consistently able to just heal me if shit has hit the fan. I have a secondary team of people who I'm like trying to level up, which is Jean, who is like a sword and like she also has some healing stuff. She's kind of just like, she feels to me like a better version of the main character in terms of combat stuff.
Okay.
She has like a similar thing where she can like do her RT attack is like a wind blast, and she can kind of like pick up people and then blast them over cliffs or whatever with it. And then her ult is like a field of flowers that heals you, which is neat. Faisal, who is like a bow electricity girl who has a pet raven who seems to be an old man. I've not gone deep into the lore with her. Fischl.
I see in this screenshot that she's exploring, like she is for everyone because she gets that boost.
She's a good bonus. She gets a good bonus.
She's just exploring all the time.
There's a mechanic in this game where you can set a character to kind of like go do a mission off to the side, like Assassin's Creed Brotherhood style, and she gets a bonus to doing that. The Ningguang, who I just actually leveled up a bunch last night, who is like an earth mage, like a geo mage, who can summon a big kind of like screen, like she summons like a big pair of pillars, and then between them is a screen that blocks ranged attacks from coming in at you. And that's neat. I think she's like my favorite mage, maybe her or Lisa, but they're just not, or like as far as attacky mages go, Barbara's my favorite actual mage, obviously. But I just haven't like cracked how to play as her yet. And then Chi Chi, who is another child, she is a zombie. You can tell that because she has talisman like sealing her soul into her body or something. and she's like extremely sleepy voice. I guess when you try to sprint with her, she goes like, faster? Okay, faster. It's very funny. She's very slow, very chill. and she's also like ice sword plus heals, basically. So that's my like, that's like the eight characters I'm trying to stay not all the way leveled up on. That's like Beto and Venti are the two who I'm like really, really focused on. But there's a point in one of the dungeon types where you have to have two teams of four and you kind of bounce between the two teams. And that's like from, I want to say the fourth or fifth level of that dungeon up. And so it's like, well, I need eight people. So I guess. I need to have, or really what it ends up being is like, I need to have two people who can like be team captain basically. Uh-huh. And so when I do that, I split up Venti and Beto, which is sad because they're my two faves. We didn't even talk about Beto's look. Beto is like a cool Chinese pirate with a cool red eye patch, extremely high boots, just great everything. Beto's energy is incredible. I also hate saying that because it sounds like I'm saying Beto, the American politician, whose energy is not incredible, whose vibe is not my vibe.
Anyway,
that's my crew. Who are you running, Kato?
So I'm running, like, my main character is Razor, the claymore wielder that has the pet electric or I don't know if he's the pet to the fox spirit. That's a, I don't know.
It's a wolf spirit. It's a wolf spirit, right?
It's a wolf. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love all the idol animations are so good with him. They're very good. Wolf.
Just the wolf comes up and pets him and pets him. He's like my main damage dealer, and I have this great thing with Barbara and what's his name?
Kaya.
Kaya. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. The ice guy. Yeah,
so basically, I toss on Barbara's heal over time, like regular ability, which actually applies wet to enemies if they're close to you. Then you throw Kaya's ice on there, and it'll literally freeze them. Oh, it freezes in place. Them, yeah. It's actually crowd controlled. Then I fast swap to Razor and use the attack to superconduct electricity across the entire group. And then he has a thing where after you use his elemental, he does double his own damage on his first attack in an area around him. It's so good for crowd. It's more of a combo than like separate characters that I'm like playing around with a lot. It's really like Razor's the main character, and I set up this combo to like get him into a place to just deal a ton of damage in an AoE, and it's really fun.
Finding those combos and figuring out your crew and like how do I make these characters like work well together and tag in and stuff like that is just such a joy. And like I fully get why, including me, like the reason I was looking forward to this game was because I was making a Breath of the Wild comparison with this game when I first saw trailers like a year ago or whatever. So I think that, those comparisons make sense, but this combat system is like such a different, interesting thing.
Right.
And again, like deeply manipulative, because the way you get to play with it more is to give them money to roll dice to do another pull of the lottery or the slot machine handle and see who you get or if you get anyone. There's lots of times that I'll do a full 10 pull and won't get a character at all. And at this point, I'm only doing pulls that I earn. I'm not putting any more money into it. I put like, you know, I put like $50 in over the course of the first 2 weeks. It's like, I'm really liking this game. I'm happy to pay a full price for a game in this. And I hit that and I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm not putting any more money into this game until a new full big area comes out. And then maybe I'll give them another $10 or $20 or something.
Right.
But even with just the pulls that I'm unlocking from in-game currency, it's enough to do one every week, basically. And that's kind of like a fun thing to work up to. Sometimes you get something, sometimes you don't.
You get those Primal Gems like pretty consistently throughout doing your
daily constantly working on getting up to another one of those, which is nice.
I put in $5 for that daily thing, which has been really good. Just like a small thing, and helps like build up the currency that you can use to get more pulls.
Yeah, I think I almost wish that I would so much actually rather them have a better battle pass and a straight up a subscription. I would happily pay this game $15 a month if you just gave me the, like, maybe not my pick of characters, but let me earn the characters or let me do...
Work towards a specific one.
Yeah,
maybe totally. Some of them take longer because they're more powerful or whatever. You know,
if
like
I had
that.
To, if I had to grind to unlock Diluc, like, absolutely, I would do that.
I forgot to mention, too, because she's not in the rotation, but she's my fourth and is kind of more the one that I run around with is Amber. Because I do like opening up with like some long distance attacks as like you get closer, and the fire is also again very useful for burning things down and burning shields off enemies and stuff like
totally.
That.
Totally. Before I had pulled a Xing Ling, she was super important for me because what I realized was Beidou, her like block includes if you release the block the moment that you get hit, you do full damage on your counterattack. And that includes if you're standing in fire, every second is a hit, every kick. And so I would just like set, I'd have Amber set the ground on fire with a arrow, stand in it, do a block, and then instantly be able to get full damage, which is like
That's really good.
Those sorts of combos that feel like they're using the environment and like using all the bits of the game together are just so fun.
Yeah.
So shout outs to Genshin Impact. I wish you had a fucking less... horrible monetization scheme because it's built to prey on people. I think my relationship with that is probably unique in that I grew up in a casino town. I worked in Atlantic City throughout my whole teenage years, and that meant seeing not just the ways in which gambling ruins lives, but also the ways in which it ruins communities. And it's easy for my brain to compartmentalize that because Genshin Impact doesn't have like someone in the governor's office whispering about how they want different tax codes or would like to like bulldoze a, you know, a block of right. of town or whatever. And it's like, in my mind, this is it is still bad. Gambling, it still preys on people with gambling addictions. It still preys on people who have trouble with impulse control. I think it fucking sucks. There was a degree to me where I'm like, yeah, and also we're not demolishing fucking Las Vegas or Atlantic City or any of the other casinos. And that is just as, if not much worse, because of the degree to which they can shape the physical world around them.
Yeah.
And that isn't like a...
The small thing here, too, is that they haven't, as of where I'm at, which is still pretty early, I suppose, there yeah. hasn't been any reason for me to put money into the polls except that characters seem cool, but like gameplay yeah. wise yeah. it's very easy to ignore. Well,
it's tough because they aren't counting on you, right? They're counting right. on someone right. who right. literally is compelled to just keep rolling the dice, to keep yeah. spending. Oh, it's not that much money, and the next thing you know, they are, you know, they spent $3,000 or something. Right. And like that is the model. The model is that it's the same model that FIFA Ultimate Team uses. It's the same model that, you know, a lot of other gacha games use. I think this one's getting attention because of how high quality the rest of the game is. And there's a degree to which, and I don't know what to think about this, because part of it feels like the core, which is to say the people who dominate conversations in spaces about games like Forms and Twitter, which is to say mostly white dudes, are encountering a game that has this mechanic that they care about for the first time. Like, right. they weren't up in arms when, you know, gacha games that lots of women were playing had gacha mechanics. They weren't up in arms when FIFA has built this model for years, or NBA 2K has built this model for years. But this hits them, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if I'm talking out of the side of my neck, but like that sort of. But there does seem to be a difference in response, right?
Right.
I think it's, on top of this is developed by a Chinese company. This is a game that has the issue that games developed by Chinese companies have, in which there is censorship against even saying the words Hong Kong or Taiwan because of local laws. Like that stuff feels like it is also sort of like a. Like a light that the moths of discourse want to draw themselves towards,
right.
and mm-hmm. make a lot of noise around in a way that they didn't around, like, you know, Grand Blue Fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I find myself so uncomfortable with the way that people talk about Chinese companies in the video game fandom world, because it's just like, do you expect these companies to do? To break the laws of their own company to appeal to Westerners?
Yeah.
We can't ask them to do that, even if we disagree with those laws.
The thing that ends up being difficult for me is, like, you know, where was this heat from you about Call of Duty?
Like, yes!
Being literally propagandistic for,
like, literally, Ronald Reagan is in that motherfucking video game.
Right. And it's
telling
like,
you to go to third world countries and destabilize them. Like, right. Bolivia there's, this morning, all the fucking memes about the CIA. Like, come right. on.
Where
like,
is this heat look. when Cyberpunk 2077, like, does some transphobic shit for the
millionth time.
The millionth yeah. time? Yeah. Where was that heat? And what is at the root of that? And is it... Where does that dismissal come from? And it's I know that everyone basically has their own line, right? And everyone has stuff mm-hmm. that is like, this is too far for me. This is like, this takes this off the table for me. And I think that's just like part of life, is drawing those lines and for yourself and finding that stuff. But I try my best to identify for myself, is there a through line here? Am yeah. I treating one thing differently than another thing for reasons I don't even necessarily understand? And let me try to yeah. unpack why I'm having this response. It's, you know,
decolonize your mind, essentially, right? Yeah, like, is your concern about the human rights violations that are happening from the Chinese government, which mm-hmm. is not individual Chinese citizens who just have to comply with their government's laws,
and who are like FYI. Making a game, yeah,
yeah, who are making a video game. Is that an aspect of your Western imperialism? It can be, even if those human rights violations are legitimate. Because if you spend a lot more time concerned about those human rights violations and not the ones that our own country is are committing, daily. I'm not saying for centuries. Yeah. I'm not saying like, oh, you can only care about one thing at a time. Totally. But that's not whataboutism. It's like, it's equivalence, you know? Yeah. It is, are these things as bad as are the things that our government do?
And yes. How is your, and how do you respond to these things, to both of these things? What actions can you take, if any, to, where can you have that effect? Because in my life, I know that I have a better chance of pushing the United States towards being a better place than a different country in the world. And it doesn't mean that there's not stuff that I feel uncomfortable with in terms of enough to where I'm like, I'm not going to engage with it at all. But I don't know that that is this. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It's definitely, like everything I say in the world, it's provisional, right? I could feel a different way about this in 6 months because something new came out or whatever. But like,
it's like, it's the difference. There's a difference though in a consumer product between compliance with like laws of your country and a full throated defense of those laws.
Right.
And for some people be the line, right? Like for me, I think it really is the line where it's like, this is a game where you can't say Taiwan in the chat or Hong Kong in the chat.
Right,
sucks.
But
that
where
sucks
the opening,
that's like the law,
the opening
you know?
Location of the game. I mean, this is the thing that I'm so interested to see as the game continues is each of the settings in the game is tied to a kind of philosophical through line. So like the first area, Mondstadt, is built as the city of freedom, this place where like there are no kings. The god who created this place has insisted like there can never be hierarchy in this town, which like good fucking luck because there's a church in this town. There are people with money in this town.
There's
knights. There's cops in this town. There's going to be hierarchy.
You have to get a license to use your gliders.
Anarchists are allowed to have laws also. Anyway, but the second town you go to is all about contracts and legalism and like this idea of rational individuals entering into contracts with each other. And then you see like, okay, what's that space like? And if the game's going to continue to do that for 5 more zones or whatever, that's going to be really interesting. And that sort of world building was going to say a lot about the way the developers think about the world and politics and government. And for those two opening areas to be like City of Freedom, City of Contracts, already you can start to see like, okay, these are people who see the world and are building, you know, their fiction in response to the world that they're in. So I don't think it's fair to dismiss the art because of the kind of conditions under which it was created, because I want people under all sorts of conditions to be able to make art and have that art like engaged with. I don't know. I feel like I've made peace with this part of it for myself, but I also do understand why people, again, for me, I do think that the much more easy thing to actually take a problem with is the monetization stuff. But at that point, you should be also pissed at EA for doing it with FIFA and all of their sports games, for 2K with NBA 2K stuff. With
NBA 2K, which has had just this reprehensible model of monetization for at least the past 5 years.
And you still pay
for
that
worse
game.
Over time.
And you still pay for that game.
Yeah.
Right. pay for the right to then pull the slot machine handle.
Yeah. It's a fucking cover on this one.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it's worth talking about this stuff and thinking about it. Like, the reason I say everything is provisional is because I think that that's the right way to be. The thing that ends up being like, not to be like only Sith think in absolutes, but like when you have that hard line feeling like you've understood something all the way, that's like how you're setting yourself up for your pratfall a week from now. Like I am not someone, I'm smart enough to know I'm dumb as shit, boy. Like, that is the thing you learn. Like, once you start to learn a little bit, you go like, oh, shit, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I know enough to, like, weigh in, but to weigh in a sense where I'm like, and then maybe more information will come out.
Yeah. I mean, I always just try to give myself the right to change my mind on things. You know, I need to have the ability to learn more and then change my opinions.
Yep.
I can't, like, make every thought I have declarative.
Yeah.
I have to know that everything is fluid. Things change very quickly in this world. Like, my thoughts are one of those things.
Yeah.
My opinions and my feelings are one of those things. And also, like, learning how to be wrong is just very important in general. And like learning how to admit that you are wrong and to take a different stance is also very important. It will lead you to enlightenment.
It's really tough. Yeah.
It's no frappy. Anyway.
We should take a break and we should come back and talk about some different games because otherwise we're just going to spiral.
Talk about Genshin Impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
All right, we are back. Kato, I know you have been playing a new game that I'm curious about.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about Tenderfoot Tactics?
Yeah. So, like the title suggests, it's a tactics game. You're playing as a group of goblins in a kind of very magically infused world, in such that whenever you do certain. First, it's a grid based kind of tactics game. And each of your different goblins start with like a different ability. There's a healer. There's one that does this kind of buff. One of them is kind of a more standard attacker that has a grenade.
Okay. Magic can do lots of things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it definitely feels like this is, I don't know what else they could have called it, but it is still affecting what you end up doing throughout combat in this game is you end up affecting the environment a lot.
Okay.
So, for example, when you heal, it actually promotes plant growth.
And okay.
Plants that grow in certain areas end up becoming difficult terrain. And so as soon as you enter them, you have to stop your movement.
Interesting.
When you throw a grenade, it actually drops the ground in the area that it affects down a level. And in order to climb up certain amounts of levels, it takes up more of your movement. Things like that.
I'm now remembering this. I knew I'd played a demo of it, but I forgot anything except the visual style. But yeah, that sense of like the environment, the tiles around you are changing based on your ability is really, really unique.
And also... will change on their own. So you'll see like grass grow into a full bush over the course of like two or three people's turns. Like you get the sense that nature is kind of in rapid movement at all times. And it really kind of like solidifies into this idea of a world that seems kind of energized with growth.
Right.
And it's really interesting too, because like you set up a path where like you're gonna get your rogue character who has a backstab to go around people, and then suddenly because time ticks down during everyone else's turn, by the time it gets back to the rogues, that path has been completely grown over, and it would take you five turns to even walk that way anymore.
Interesting. That sounds frustrating, but not bad? I don't know.
No, yeah, I mean, it's like, it just means you end up having to adapt a lot, but I think it's good because it also has this facing mechanic where if you get attacked from anywhere other than your front, you get knocked down on the timeline. I forgot to mention, too, you're on the right side hand of your screen during combat, there is a timeline of when your people are going and when enemies are going, and you can knock them down by doing an attack that deals a nerve. A nerve is when you get attacked from the sides or the back.
Gotcha.
So facing is very important, but also you can you can use this, if knowing that things will grow over turns, you can use this to your advantage, right? You can set up in a way where, like, right now my left has a bit of grass that isn't any terrain, but I know that in, like, my next two players' turns, that's going to be a bush. So I can set up and use that as protection for my back where people can't walk into it immediately.
Interesting.
So, like, yeah, there's this really great sense of push and pull with the environment, not just the environment, but, like, also the way you position your characters and all of that coming together to, like, really have this dynamic sense of the battle, the field of play that a lot of tactics games only do in, like, a destructive sense, usually, right? Like, you can change the terrain by, like, blowing things up and, like, you know, that'll knock a wall down or get rid of cover. But unless it's a specific, like, player ability, they usually doesn't grow on its own, which is really, really fun. Yeah.
The thing that you haven't mentioned yet is what this game fucking looks like.
Oh, yeah. It also looks pretty fucking great. It's this really cool... how do I describe it? It's very simple, kind of three-dimensional characters. There's not a lot of depth at all. You can tell it's 3D when you spin the camera around, basically. But otherwise, when you, like, look at an image of it, it is very kind of sparse. But you have only... There's, like, kind of two modes, right? There's in combat and... out of combat, where you're kind of walking around this open world,
right?
In the open world, you get a very limited view, kind of like the circle around your characters, and beyond that, there's this kind of procedurally generated noise happening as you move through the world, where you think it's like maybe your characters see things, but they're not sure. And then as you get closer, it kind of solidifies into what it actually is, which is a really neat kind of,
it's like,
visual effect.
Everything is super low poly. I don't actually know if it is low poly, but there's an effect of it looking low poly,
right,
untextured or low textured. But specifically, the noise you're talking about is literally like seeing mountains in the distance that are like vibrating.
Yeah.
Or seeing like... the like trees sprout or like sticks sprout up that then become tree like trunks and then and then soon you're like, oh, I'm in a forest, this is a forest I'm in,
right?
It's really wild.
And I think it speaks to that sense of the landscape being imbued with like a mystery and a magic that is beyond your immediate understanding, right? There's a lot about like magic and mysticism in kind of the small bits of text that you do get. There's not a ton of dialogue. There's an opening kind of gambit that sets up that you are essentially looking to harness the power of spirits against an enemy called the fog. And the fog comes on like the first night. You're like hiding out in this house to try to recruit you. And there's this really great exchange about how the fog is... The fog calls itself a new age, a new age and a new, hold on, where's the line? It's really great. There's this bit about it, this empire of the fog becoming, I have a screenshot here. I just lost it.
I'm busy watching these characters like skate down a mountain right now. Or not skate, but slide. It looks like they're skating, IMO.
Oh yeah, yeah! I love that. You when you can crouch and you'll just slide down mountains, which is very fun. The fog is says the dawn of an empire is upon you, and this tonight is your chance to become an important individual in the making of the next age. Lay down your weapons, and then your kind of de facto leader says, "Silence! I know this lie. Such an empire will never bend to the will of its servants. Aspirants to that scale of power will only find themselves tools to it." And like that's the setup. That's like great shit.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's a
just
good
like
setup.
And then
you're off into the world to try to figure out some way to beat back the fog. Presumably.
Yeah, and so at a certain point, you reach the edges of a fog. Like you enter a zone where you can know like your sphere of view is becomes obscured. Like you can't see very far. You can no longer kind of see the horizon anymore when you're in the fog, and then you see kind of enemies out in the world, and once you defeat a pack of enemies, it opens up that area again.
Interesting.
To being visible.
Okay.
But yeah, you're literally kind of like fighting back the fog and trying to find these spirits in order to... I've tried to fight one of the spirits, which ends up being a fight with a bunch of witches, and then you kind of want to... But I lost because the witches are actually super powerful. This is the kind of like the end, like the real meat of the game is once you've leveled up enough, you get to choose different classes. At first, you're all just goblins. And you have different, there's like different abilities you can get as like a regular goblin. But once you're a goblin level 4, you can become a witch of the wood.
Interesting.
Which I'm very excited to get to those bits, because those are the bits that kind of they show off in some of the trailers where you're casting like fire spells or like ice spells or plant spells, and more directly even kind of affecting the way that things are growing and moving around the battle grid.
Yeah, this is definitely risen on my I want to play this week thing quite a bit. Is there like, if you lose a fight, what happens? Is that like a game over? Or are you
You have two options. It says like retry the fight, or you reconvene at the house that you like start at. Okay. So it's kind of like you've lost territory to the fog, essentially, like how far you've gotten. Because then you go back out, and then it's like, oh, the fog has creeped in a little bit more.
Right. Do you keep your progress? Do your character stay leveled up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. They stay leveled up. It's not too harsh or anything, but the world seems pretty large for the like size of your characters too. Like there seems to be a lot of space, and there's this really great moment when you get your first map. There's like you don't see yourself on the map. It makes note of like we don't have the magic to show yourself on a map. and also I haven't found enough. I'm like kind of trying to beeline towards the next point of civilization. There's like little towns. Apparently there'll be other like villagers and map makers, and apparently their maps won't necessarily line up to your north, which is a great little detail of just like in this kind of world where like everyone's kind of separated and there's not a lot of connection because the fog is cutting everything off. People will make maps with different orientations just because they're not talking to each other, right? They're like, this way is north to us because of this tree or whatever. Yeah, there's just like a ton of great world building and also like a really fun and interesting tactics game. And I'm like super excited to get deeper into it.
Right. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check it out. This is good.
This looks really adorable.
Yeah,
the visuals are so good.
The art styles look so cute. And everybody's a cute little animal.
Yeah, it's so happy. Interesting. Sorry, go ahead, Gita.
Oh, I just really like this sort of this art style that's been very common in indie games recently, where it's like not quite cel shaded, like this flat color, like no detail in the faces or anything, just like a lot of big blobs of color moving on top of blobs of color. I just find it so soothing to look at, makes everything look very cute, but doesn't like disallow images of horror or images of violence. I think it's like a good balance in terms of aesthetic. That's all.
I think that like there's something really interesting here because, in a year of wholesome games and stuff, et cetera, this is a game that I think very easily could lean in that direction if they wanted to and be like, we're a cutesy game about playing cutesy characters. And instead, it seems like it's, because I want to be clear, these characters are really cute. Eventually, this one has a big hat. This one looks like it's a goblin, what looks like a mouse person, which very cute. Big ears, big, floppy ears are just cute to me. But when you read to me that this is a game about an empire of ill repute coming to, unlike the good empires, coming to stomp these people out or coerce them into working alongside them. That adds to it quite a bit. And there is something about the world in which you can't quite see beyond your own perspective that makes this look both cute and creepy. There's a moment in the trailer that's very clearly like there are some ghosts that these players are fighting, and it's like everything about this feels like you're stuck in a tomb to me, and that is creepy looking, and that blend is really nice.
It's absolutely the like the unknown wilds being kind of terrifying to people who don't have a lot of connection because there's like distance is like the big issue in this world. But like, yeah, it's really neat. It's really neat. It's very much like these characters are cute, but like this world is terrifying. Like I routinely almost lose fights.
I'm excited for this now.
It luckily isn't too harsh. Like when you lose a character in a fight, as long as you win the fight, they'll come back up. You know, it's okay. But I am routinely down to like my last character in a lot of fights, just like people get surrounded. That's mm-hmm. the big thing that is rough about it too, is like getting knocked down off the timeline. Can snowball so quick if you're in a bad position, and people get like, because the one thing I don't think I mentioned is when you do get hit from the side, you automatically turn that way. So you can set up a situation when you're making someone turn around and opening them up to other, so like to other of your characters to continually knock them back off the timeline. It's like difficult, but not too punishing when you do lose, but a really like good challenge in trying to get through this combat, and just like a really interesting world. Yeah.
One of my favorite games this year was also an open world tactics game, Horizon's Gate. And so to have a second one of those come out that has like a really unique art style and vibe is exciting. So
yeah,
I will definitely be checking this out. Gita, I know you have one more thing you want to bring to the table today.
Yeah.
You sounded kind of ambivalent. Is that
It's not, I mean, okay. So, you know, have you ever met people in grad school? Yes. Let me answer that question.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yep.
It's like a combination of things that are making me feel ambivalent. And like part of it is having dated someone who is in grad school and like being the daughter of an academic who taught graduate level English courses before. And the other is just like the game itself is very fun and I find a lot of it very amusing. But it's just, okay, so the Stralogaster is a game that's good. I think that the game is good.
Okay.
But there's something about the sense of humor that it sends like alarm bells off in my brain, like having been around theater kids for too long, where it's like, when am I going to get really, really sick of this? Like, just really, really hate, like, am I? Like, it's a question, like, am I going to get really, really sick of the sense of humor in this game? I can't tell, but there are moments where I'm like, this is like an English major finding out a way to make a fart joke, you know? Like, I don't know.
So wait, what is
Stralogaster?
Talk to me about Stralogaster. What is Stralogaster?
It's like it made me think very deep. Okay, I have to start from the beginning. Stralogaster is a game, sort of a Shakespearean in tone comedy of errors. It takes place in London during the plague when Shakespeare was alive and writing plays. Mm-hmm. He shows up as not quite a character, but he's a character that other characters in the game know.
Okay.
So it's very much inspired by Shakespeare's comedies. Okay. And it has like a very fun, like Middle Ages flair to it. Like there's each character and scene are announced by a chorus singing in a medieval arrangement.
Okay.
Like the attributes of that character and the situation they're going to go in, reminding you of the sort of long-term plot line. But you play this guy who survives the plague by looking to the stars and using astronomy to figure out how to fight the fever he was feeling. And he decides to open up his own doctor's office where he prescribes solutions to people's problems, psychological and physical, by looking to the stars.
Huh.
And it's really actually very, very adorable. You end up most of the time you can predict what people's problems are based on their symptoms, right? When the first person comes in is like, I have trouble making water, he says. There's trouble peeing. They have pain in my kidney area. And you're like, that's kidney stones. And you're like, and you're correct. But a lot of time you can diagnose these people, but what they really want is advice from you on how to deal with their stuff. So you end up trying to help these characters navigate problems that are accurate to the sort of the era where they are living. There are, though, a lot of winks and nods to our modern senses of humor and modern situations. Like one of the characters that you meet is this like hypochondriac.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of references to like the wellness movement in like our modern society. Like there's this guy has like a list of foods he can't eat because they produce bad humors. And he's always, you know, he's got his hand on a medical textbook and now thinks that he knows more than his doctors, that kind of thing. Now, on the other hand, there are these really interesting plot lines, especially with the female characters. One character is a Moorish woman who is implied as helping Shakespeare write Merchant of Venice. And she goes to the blog for the doctor for help, not just navigating her partnership with Shakespeare, but navigating the world as a woman and trying to figure out how to create a legacy that will supersede Shakespeare's, where her work does not end up under Shakespeare's name and she's remembered throughout history. Huh. And it ends up being a very thoughtful narrative on sort of the unsung women of history who were working in theater mm-hmm. and literature, but have not been historically appreciated. But then, you know, then
that sounds good. Right now, yeah, we're like, you're at the part of this game where I'm like, I get why you like this. This sounds good.
Yeah, you know, I really like you. Each character will come to your office 6 times and they'll have a different, you okay. give them a different reading each time. And, you know, when you look to the stars, it's not like a literal thing. You'll see it'll start off with like 1 or 2 options and then it'll get more complicated as you go on. And sometimes, you know, it'll start off with like, it's either this like obvious thing or this obvious thing. Like there's only one star you look at and it's like, you know, it's either the problem is either where their Cancer is or where their Jupiter is. Right. Later on, you look at stars in combination to each other. So, this interpretation of their star chart says that this constellation and this constellation and this movement of this star means this thing, you know, generally.
And you're vaguely choosing which one of these to give. It's almost as if you're looking for justification to give the advice or reading or interpretation of their situation want, because all of those are true. If you look up at the stars, all of those configurations are happening and you're just picking one of them to point out, basically.
Yeah, essentially, okay. Yeah. Then, you know, it's a lot like the sort of modern way that young people have gotten into astrology now. Sure. It reminds me a lot of, I think if you don't understand why your friends are suddenly really into astrology, this is a good game to like help you figure that out. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of contradictory things in these readings too. And you are kind of just picking which story will make the character and yourself feel better. Mm-hmm. Which story that is in the star chart, a justification for the advice that you want to give this person. Right. And like that's a lot. Like, you know, when I got really into it, I still read CoStar like at least once a week. You know, it's like a lot. Like when I look at my star chart, I am deliberately picking as a conscious human being, like what parts of the chart to pay attention to, because they're they feed into my own desires of what I want to do to focus on this week, this month, in order to be a better, more thoughtful person, like better mm-hmm. to my peers, better at my job, et cetera, et cetera. It's a useful way just to organize your thoughts and organize your goals, because you just think, oh, Mercury is in retrograde. I really got to be careful about speaking clearly and being thoughtful about other people's struggles right now, because I bet a lot of other people are struggling. And that's true all the time, but it's nice to have a reminder.
Uh-huh, right.
But there's this other aspect here where there's like, parts of the sense of humor are just a little bit immature in a way that I know Shakespeare was. Like, Shakespeare is all about jokes about erections, sex, and farts.
I was going to say, about fart and boner jokes. Like, what's the, okay.
Yeah. Well, no, it's here. It's like, you end up having an affair with a married woman, you fall for her, and then she breaks up with you. And one of these choral, like, it ends up being mostly in these sort of choral arrangements. And one of these choral arrangements, like, you don't have to worry about fapping. There's other women out there. And I'm like, oh, boy. time traveled, you know, in a really roundabout way back to 2012. Uh-huh. And then another, I realized there's a character who's clearly pretending to be Italian. And it's very, very funny after a while because he just does this horrible Italian accent.
He's just Italian, like, Elon Musk.
He's Italian. He is Alex Arbuckle. Yes, it's true. And then you realize after a while that when he's being introduced in that choral arrangement, they're doing Amore. They're doing When the Moon. And it's just like a long-term groan. We're just like a bunch of really, really smart people got in a room and figured out how to do It's Amore in the most like academic ivory tower ass way possible. Like, shut the fuck up.
There's the line between wanting to playfully tease someone and being actually annoyed. Do you know what I mean? There's like, oh, fuck off, nerd. You know?
Yeah, but
there's
exactly, also like,
okay, I get it. But it's boring. Like, let's keep moving.
You put a lot of work into this joke, into this internet meme, and like it's a high effort and very highly produced internet meme. Mm-hmm. And I'm angry that you just didn't do the joke because I got the joke. You know, I understand the joke. It just makes me feel like whenever I encounter that in fiction, what I feel is, oh, the makers of this piece of media believe that they are very, very smart. And I, as a contrarian, want to call them stupid.
Uh-huh. Right. Right.
You know, I like so
actually,
much about
you're
this
enjoying
game.
Your time mostly.
Yeah. Most of the time I like it, but it's like, will it ever become intolerable to me is like what I'm trying to suss out. Because I have a lot of game left. It's very easy to play this game, too.
A lot of bad relationships I've been in have hit that point, and then I've gone, oh no, the fact that I'm even having this conversation with myself means that I've already divested from this relationship. Yeah. Or is this being responsible and thinking about the ways I can improve the relationship and
It's like, I'm having this, there's within me, there are two wolves, essentially. Yeah, no, I'm having this fight
within
myself.
One of them is singing That's Amore in the most intolerable way possible.
And the other one is just smoking a blunt and going to sleep.
Uh-huh.
No, it's like the conversation I'm having within myself is I know that I'm going to finish it because I like the basic gameplay loop so much. And it goes by very, very quickly. These readings, you know, like so much of the game is good. The voice acting is incredible, which is great because there's so much of it. Most of the game is listening to these skits and like paying attention to what your client has said so that you can give them an accurate reading.
Yeah.
Based on like exactly what they've told you and what they want advice on. And, you know, the delivery and the acting in this game is like really, really, really fantastic.
Right.
A lot of very good. You can tell that these people, they must have rehearsed it in the space where they could be with each other because so much of it's play-like dialogue where it goes into each other, people react to each other, you know, it feels very theatrical.
Right.
And you know, but it only takes like 5 minutes for that and then like a couple of minutes at most to pick which reading you want and then like a minute and a half, 2 minute resolution at the other side. So, and then as soon as that's done, you go straight into the next patient. So it just is very easy to keep going and going and going and going. But I just don't know, like, I need to know whether I'm being the asshole, you know? I'm trying to figure out if, like, this is all sincere and these people just have a corny sense of humor. Or is it actually pretentious? Like, what is the line there? And how do I feel about that?
Right. It's, like, so hard to know where that line is ever because so much of that is just personal taste and stuff, right? Like, And often it's also just, like, one of those things where I cared so much about this when I was – when I was surrounded by other people in like college where it was like, I don't want to hang out with these people because I like they're just going to quote Monty Python at me for the next 5 hours.
It's like we're going to watch.
I can't do it this week.
The same YouTube videos.
Right.
Drink the same beers.
Watch the same episodes of Futurama. We're going to like it's going to be the same shit. And fuck. And sorry. and at that point, I'm like, but now I'm like, this is the people in my life who are like that now are people I only see once every other month. I'm now especially, but let's say last year, pre-COVID, like there are people I only saw a few times a year anyway. And I've gotten to the point where it's like, yes, please give me play the hits. We haven't seen each other in so long. I don't mind this. Yeah, this exactly. is kind of nice. The difference between that and playing a game where you're immersed in that, I think it's pretty wide, but I think that's always just going to be a personal call, right? It's just like, is how much is too much, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it is a personal call. It is, but it is just very much like I'm getting transported back.
Report back in when you're done because I need to know.
Back in time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally.
I'm sure there's also multiple resolutions because every reading, you know, stories can resolve in different ways based on the readings you give characters. So
yeah, but you know no way for them not to do the That's Amore bit. You know that was built. That was baked in. There's no way around that.
Oh, my God. Well, I love that that character in many ways. It's right. clear that he is like a real doctor with a medical license that's come to inspect you. Uh-huh. Like he's got a comical mustache, you know, like keeps coming up with rarer and rarer diseases to try to trick you on to see if you know, understand like anything about medicine. Yeah. There's like so many good, that's like, good. So the stories they tell across the time you spend with characters are always really good. And the jokes, the humor, when it's enacted by two characters interacting with each other, I think that level of humor is incredibly funny.
That makes sense.
There's a great reading where one of your lovers comes and they say, a lover of mine has been cheating on me. I think, do a reading. And it's just this very great, tense situation where there's like little parentheticals in the reading screen as well. Where they're like, it's really like a holistic approach to the tone in the story. Yeah. Where everything comes out of the tone. They knew they wanted to do a Shakespearean comedy of errors. And like a little bit of Commedia dell'arte in there as well.
Sure.
But they all the mechanics are ways to add to those jokes, essentially. But there is just something baseline about that sense of humor where it's just like, I went to a liberal arts college and I experienced some shit. So I'll let you know when I finish it. But I really dig a lot of the part of it. It's just like, it sounds cool.
But also,
Because
they're a little much. I mean, that's what it is. It sounds like you're describing your friend who's like, oh, yeah, they're great, but sometimes they're a little much, you know?
Bring up this TV show around them.
Right.
Please. That'll be like
they
a whole
won't
day.
Shut up about it. I'm happy they have it. I'm happy they like it, but I just don't need to be in the room. Happens. Yeah. It happens.
Hey, remember Super Hulock?
We're not going down this path.
You can't. Look.
Don't invoke these.
The second time I've said it, it's like Beetlejuice. We just need one more.
No, do and not.
A girl with that fandom red hair will
just
come up
behind
me.
Destiny Rain, and I could not focus anymore on the raid.
I'm so sorry.
Damn, inside shit. All right, that is going to do it for us this week, or not this week. We'll be back later this week, but for today at least. It's Monday and it's not even late in Monday, but I'm all Monday out. I have so much more to do today.
I'm so sleepy. Yeah, same.
Oh, fuck. All right. I don't have access to my email right now, which means I can't go into the question bucket because sometimes in the middle of a month, I'll just randomly lose access to my email for a few days. So that's fun. No idea why. But you can send your email to gaming@vice.com. Hopefully we'll be able to dig into those soon. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone.bo/BOEN. Follow me on Twitter @Austin_Walker. Where can people follow you, Kato?
@A_Kato_appears.
And Gita.
@XOXOGossipGita.
Follow everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. Gita, you have anything going up this week that people should go read on any side of the site?
Well, I think I'm still working on the feature about the future of movie theaters. Last week I did write about the Seraphian situation.
Oh, and correct.
People seem to like that article. Yeah, so if you haven't read it, it's a... need a text format.
Yeah, I was going to say, go read the article. In retrospect, we couldn't talk about that today, but I'm tired. Let's not. Go read the piece.
Let's go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. You can find that on Motherboard. I'm sure it's also on waypointdevice.com, but I'm scrolling and not seeing it. I don't know if it just wasn't tagged or what, but
I see it.
League of Legends fake anime pop star is sad tweeting about genocide.
That was an Emmanuel headline.
Shout outs to Emmanuel Myberg. Okay. All right. We will be back later this week. I hope everyone has a good week. Stay safe. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.